Okay, so there's day 30, which is a Thursday, right? Four class days from now, that's Thursday next week, right? So that's when homeworks 23 through 27 are due, right? So everything I assigned this week, the thing I assigned Monday, all that's due next Thursday. Then Monday, 2 Mondays from now, is day 31. Which is...
The homework that we gave you last time, that was 11 to 22, right? No, 15 to 22.
16 to 22. Yeah, 16, 17, 18, 21, 22.
Yes.
Yeah, I owe you the solutions to that. Mm-hmm. And then I owe you, you know, the graded homeworks themselves.
Yeah. On the syllabus, it says 32 is the test.
Yes.
And 31 is the question.
Yes, I like the, earlier this week I was getting it confused and I was saying 31, but when I actually go back to my own syllabus and review it, then I get the correct date. Right.
How long is
that
what did October is 32.
Okay. So, I guess one thing to note is now that we're this far, we're into section 11.5, you should be familiar with the first four sections of chapter 11 by now, right? I mean, I've covered everything not exactly in the same order, the same style as the book, but we have covered the topics of the first four sections. So be sure to look at those four sections for more examples. In a few cases, there might be something that's a little different than the way I presented it. You might like the book's presentation better or not. And always lots of extra practice problems, especially the odd-numbered ones. So now we're into section 5. This is a... have a special situation, but it comes up often enough that it's worth considering this special situation in detail. So the picture I like to draw is this. We have some situation where, you know, these series, we're talking about adding numbers, adding more numbers, keep adding another number. Okay, so imagine we start at zero, right? We haven't added anything yet. Then we add our first term. Okay, it is... called A1, it's our first term. You know, let me start at zero. Let's see what I meant. Then our next term is going to be negative, so we're going to actually subtract it. So you can imagine here's a kind of a number line, and we go up from level zero to A0. Then we go down, but we don't go down as far as we came up. And then next we're going to go up, but we're not going to go up as far as we just went down. And then we're going to go down.
It seems like levels. You're going up and then you're going down.
Yeah, that's why they call it alternating.
Like when you're on a tower, when you go to the 5th floor, and then you come back to the 3rd, and then you go to the 6th. You get me?
Well,
is
sort
it
of. Is
what I'm looking
five,
at?
Two,
the difference here is in the situation I'm imagining, once you're between 3 and 5, you stay between 3 and 5.
Okay.
Right?
But you get my idea. Like
you go up, then down, then up.
Yes.
Yeah. Now, the key here is that... every time in this scenario, I never go further than however far I went the previous time. So that way, I keep getting sandwiched in between I get better and better bounds. I keep getting narrowed down.
Okay.
And so so this leads to the alternating series test. So if you have a decreasing, or at least not increasing, sequence of numbers, and they converge to zero, okay, so that these little steps get smaller and smaller. Notice that if they're decreasing and they converge to zero, then these numbers have to be either zero or positive, right? Because if they were negative and then they were decreasing, they would never come back up to zero. So converging to zero plus decreasing implies non-negative. Then the claim is that if you do the series, which represents this back and forth here, so how do we can represent it in a formula using the trick of powers of negative 1, right? Negative 1 to the 0 is 1, negative 1 to the 1 is negative 1. So that's why I started at 0, because I just arbitrarily decided I wanted to start by going up. Then this thing converges. And not only does it converge, but you have estimates. You get upper and lower estimates basically for free, right? Because every time you're making a step, you're backtracking a little bit, but you never backtrack all the way, or you never overshoot where you went before. So I get up to A0, but I never get that high again. I get up to A0 minus A1 plus A2, but I never get that high again. Because every time I'm taking a smaller step.
Is there a reason why it only hits that toughest part and then never come back?
Well, if we assume that each of these arrows is shorter than the previous one, mm-hmm. you see that, okay, to come all the way back here, well, the problem is next time I drop, how could I undo all that drop? Well, if the next arrow is shorter, I'll never get back. If these two arrows were exactly the same length, then I could get exactly all the way back, but I would never get any higher.
Mm-hmm. Right. I see.
Right. Because if this first hop back up doesn't take me up here, then I'm going to have to try and do it on the next hop. But the next time I go up, it's after I've already dropped again. So now I'm even further in the hole.
Oh, it seems like the distance between the arrows are getting shorter and shorter.
Yeah.
So you're not ever come back to the first one, which is the toughest one.
Yeah. If the arrows were exactly the same length, uh-huh. then I could come back. But the limit is going to zero, so eventually they have to get shorter.
Pretty much.
If it's going to go to zero. That's fine. So under these two assumptions, non-increasing, going to zero, then this alternating sum converges. Mm-hmm. Because the arrows get shorter and shorter, and you get narrowed down into narrower gaps in here. And you have these nice... whenever you stop at an even index term here, where the last thing you did was add, right, go up, that's an upper bound. So it's really easy to get actual estimates of this series. So let's write. So for all p, how about this? How about for all p odd and all q even? Right, if, given the way we indexed it, if you stop at an odd index term, you're the last thing you did was subtract. So that's going to be a lower estimate. So those will all be underestimates. If you stop at an even index term, you can overestimate.
next.
Can this be applied like in the XY coordinates, put in numbers?
XY coordinates?
Yeah, like let's say if you go 5 units of y up, uh-huh, and you're just subtracting 3 units of y down.
Well, sure, we could think of it as kind of like there's a, instead of an n, I guess if you want to think of it as an x, and certainly that's the way I'm representing it. I guess I would think of it as there's an n coordinate that's the horizontal coordinate, and then the y, I guess, is, you know, corresponds to the ans. So.
Yeah. Pretty much.
Yeah.
With P and the Q, what do you mean? What does each one represent? I'm not quite getting it.
P is an odd number, Q is an even number.
Oh, okay.
So you just need to recognize when you're adding or subtracting.
Yeah.
When it's a P, you're subtracting. Like A1, you're subtracting to A1 and subtracting to A3. And when it's an even, you're adding like plus 4 or plus 2.
Yeah, I get it.
Yeah, see. 0, 2, 4. At those stopping indices, I get upper estimates. At 1 and 3, those stopping indices, I get lower estimates.
Yeah.
So we were looking at the harmonic series here, right?
Mm-hmm.
This one converges. If you want to make it start at zero, you would have to re-index it. When you write in pure sig notation, but the idea is you're doing negative 1 to the 0 plus 1 over 0 plus 1 plus negative 1 to the 1 plus 1 over 1 plus 1, and so on, right? And that does match up, right? This is an odd power of negative 1, so that's negative 1. The denominator is 1. But the next one, even power of negative 1, so positive 1 numerator, 2 in the denominator. And then all I did here was I factored out one factor of negative 1. So the way I wrote up the alternating series test here is, I had it start at zero, but of course, if you had started at a different index, you know, it might be. So let's see. What does this tell us? So in particular, if we looked at, say, if you stop on a negative term, this number is small. So for example, this. And here would be an overestimate. Maybe I just go one more term. Or I could have done one less term and stopped at 30. Or I could have gone out to, you know, 1/7, whatever. And the original series we cared about, there was a is actually the opposite of this series, so things would get, you know, turned around. But there's a general principle that with these alternating series of shrinking terms, if you
you stop on a positive term, that's an overestimate. If you stop on a negative term, it's an underestimate. Now, these are actually pretty poor estimates. I mean, the problem is not with the general procedure of alternating series. It's with the fact that the terms are going to zero very slowly, relatively. The difference between this estimate and this estimate is a fifth, 0.2. So we're not even sure about the first decimal place yet. So this thing, you know, it's. I mean, what's happening is, you know, in this case, we're going from 0, then we go down to 1, then we go up. You go down 1, then you go up a half, then you go down a third, then you go up a fourth, then you go down a fifth, up a sixth. It takes several turns, and then where it starts to, you're going to have to go, you know, 10 terms before you're even going to have it down to a tenth, right? Between a tenth in the spread between the upper and lower. And so, you know, if you want to get 2 decimal places, you'd have to do like 100 terms. So this is a very slowly converging thing. It does converge. You want something that converges faster, you need these terms to go to 0 faster. There's a lot of nice formulas of this nature. I mean, like, it's actually known that this thing goes to the log of a half, which is the same as the negative log of 2. And that's very elegant looking because it's such a simple thing. And then why does the logarithm pop out?
So how would you make it go to 0 faster?
Well, I can't make that series go to 0 faster, but I could choose to spend my time looking at series that do go to 0 faster. And in particular, if you wanted to estimate the logarithm of 2, or the logarithm of a half, there are better ways to estimate it than that.
Right. Could it be like 1 over 100, 1 over 200, 1 over 300? Are you adding zeros to the main numbers?
Well, I mean,
you just to 0 faster. No?
If you multiply everything by 1 over 100, then everything is smaller, so your absolute errors are smaller, right? Uh-huh. But your relative errors, like the number of significant figures you have, mm-hmm. that'll still be inefficient, right? Uh-huh. It'll still, you know, you'll still need, if we do 1 over 100, 1 over 200, 1 over 300. You know, we're still going to need 10 terms to know the first non-zero decimal.
Because we still want a decimal. Yeah. Okay.
And you'll still need 100 terms to know the first, to know the second non-zero decimal. Wow. So you just put 2 zeros in front, but in terms of, you know, relative uncertainty or significant figures, there's no gain. You know.
Okay. I see.
So yeah, just multiplying by a small constant doesn't change the dynamics in a qualitative way. I don't think. But here's another one that goes much faster, right?
Oh, that was yesterday.
Yeah, but now it's alternating.
What does the exclamation mark for?
It's just like a
factorial.
What does that mean?
Like 1 times 1 times 1 3 factorials 3 times 2 times 1. Let's say 6 factorials 6 times 5 times 4 times 3 times 2 times 1.
Huh?
Yeah. Like 3 factorial is 3 times 2 times 1, which is 6.
Okay. Yes, I get that.
There you go. See?
Oh, I see.
Nice. Yeah. These things, the one with zero factorial is just, that seems kind of weird and made up, but it works, and the alternatives are worse. So this one is just kind of a definition that makes our formulas less complicated.
So it just equals one?
Yeah, by definition.
Okay.
Right. Just so again, just trying to make sure, we are testing the alternating series because we're starting the series at zero, right? Mm-hmm. Yes.
Or I started at zero kind of for convenience, so it would match this thing.
Yes. Yes, that's what I'm asking.
Yeah.
But can it be tested then? And if we start out on three?
Sure. As far as convergence, it doesn't matter what happens about throwing off a few terms at the mm-hmm. beginning. As far for the estimates,
that's what
the, there's a the general version is if you stop at a negative term, you've got an underestimate.
Yeah.
If you stop at a positive term, you've got an overestimate. So that's the general way to state it.
Yeah.
So you don't have to have the index start at zero. You can figure out what to do if the index starts somewhere else.
Would you ever have to give an average between the two, or does that matter?
Well, you could give an average between the two, right? That would be a very reasonable guess if you're trying to make an estimate. You just have to remember that whenever somebody gives an estimate. Somebody might ask, okay, how accurate is the estimate? Do you promise me that your estimate is no more than 0.1 over and 0.1 under, right? If you have a lower and an upper estimate, then you can make such a promise because you can say, okay, I have my lower estimate at 0.7, I have my upper estimate at 0.9, I'm going to give you the estimate 0.8, and now I promise you the true number is at most 0.1 away from my 0.8 estimate, yeah.
Which would be really close.
Makes sense.
Yeah. Well, it depends. I mean, sometimes the terms are shrinking really fast, so uh-huh. your lower estimate or your upper estimate, whichever one used a later term, could be much closer to the answer than the midpoint.
Oh, I get you. Okay. Yeah.
So, let's look at this one. All right. So. Okay, so non-increasing terms, the terms clearly go to zero, right? I mean, if you have n large, n factorial will be very large because you're multiplying by bigger and bigger numbers. So it definitely converges. That's the easy part of the alternating series. And the only slightly more work if you want to get some estimates, okay? So let's make a list. Lower bound. Okay? Well, there's kind of a trivial lower bound where, I guess, zero, right? I should be careful. Our first term is positive. So because of that, zero would be kind of a trivial lower bound. If our first term was negative, zero would be a trivial upper bound. So here would be the start at the first term and then just quit there. And that's an upper bound because it's positive. And that's just one over zero factorial minus one over one factorial. Okay, one minus one is zero. Okay. So in this example, the first two terms are equal magnitude. So you start it, think of it as starting at zero, hop up to one, then you hop back down to zero. But after that, the terms are strictly smaller, so you're never going to come back to zero again.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, I'm getting it right. Okay. A half. Okay, and then we do the next one. So It's probably easier now to just think of it as going like this. Okay. Okay, so I added up the first three terms. I got a half. Now I need to subtract a sixth, right? So I think I get a third. And then for the next one, we're going to have a third. And then we add the next term, which will be the 1 over 4 factorial, which is a 24th. Okay. 9, 24, 3/8. And we subtract the next term, which is 1 over 120. I don't know if I want to do that one in my head. I think it's like 8 times 15 is 120, so I guess it's 2/60. I'm going to go with 11/30.
Let's see.
I think my TI-89 can actually reduce the fractions. So.
Yes, do that right.
Yay, okay. Okay. All right, and then the 5 fact... Okay, so we just did 5 factorial. 6 factorial is 1 over 720.
Oh, that's a big one.
Plus,
right?
Oh, okay.
7 what? 720. And
I get 53 over 144. Yeah. Okay, the fractions are starting to become more cumbersome. Okay.
53, yeah.
Let's look at the. Let's look at actual. Let's think about this in decimals. If you keep going, this one converges a lot faster. So
can we see that it gets really close to?
Well, let's
like guaranteed is 0.3.
Yes.
0.36 something.
Yeah. Right. We know it's between 0.366 something and 0.368 something. So we can go a little further, right? Okay, so.
But they'll never meet.
Right, because none of these terms is actually zero. They get smaller and smaller, but none of them are actually zero. So they get closer and closer together. They get as close as you want, because in the limit they go to zero. But yeah, they never quite meet. But if you want them to be, 10 decimal places close, then if you wait long enough, they will be. This one actually goes pretty fast. Because every time you're with the factorials, like you see how that's 7 factorial, the 5,040. And that one is 0.3678 5 7.
What was that fraction? In fraction form.
103 over 280.
He's right because he. calculate.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, there is a pi over 3.
No,
I'm
sorry.
You calculate it into that?
Okay, so. And then 8 factorial is, so multiply 5,040 by 8, you know, 40,320, right? So.
Yeah. Like 1 times 2 times 3 times 4 times 5 times 6 times 7 times 8. It's getting longer and longer.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
But it's I've actually got, there's actually somewhere on here. I can actually even tell my calculator to just compute the factorial itself.
Oh, yeah, and the cost in the catalog in the very bottom.
Yeah. Exclamation point. There it is. But, yeah. See, the actual fractions are getting pretty unwieldy pretty fast. So. Okay, that's pretty good. Look, we've already got 4 decimal places nailed down, right? 3, 3, 6, 7, 8.
That's really close. But it apart because of the 5 after the 8 and the 3 after the 8.
Mm-hmm. So at what point would you want us to stop?
Well, if I told you, give me upper and lower estimates with a spread of 10 to the minus 4, for example, then you could stop here because the difference between these two is less than 10 to the minus 4. Right? I mean, there's, yeah. If somebody tells you, I want this accuracy, and you want to do them a favor, then you go for that accuracy, right? So this, it just depends on what accuracy you want or need. You know, I mean, for some purposes, you know, knowing the first 2 decimal places might be fine. Other purposes may need more precision. Or maybe you're just curious and you want to know more of the digits, right?
Yeah, it was like that homework assignment where it said prove that this was it greater or smaller than something 10 to the 4th power?
Oh, yes. Now I understand why.
That makes sense.
Mm-hmm. We can, if you keep going, you'll find this one converges a lot faster than that 1 over n alternating series. And in fact, the value of this series is known. Just as I've told you without explaining why that one is the natural log of a half, so about negative 0.69, this one is e to the minus 1. Yeah. Or just 1 over e. Right?
E to the minus 1?
Yeah.
Yes.
We'll just get like very close to that.
Yes.
E to the minus 1?
Yeah.
Oh my god.
Okay. Yeah, it's amazing.
Do people just like keep going with decimals and try to figure out what works?
Well, if they're interested in the decimal sequence, there's actually some advanced mathematics that I don't know very much about where people are trying to understand if you look at the decimal sequence of something like pi or e to the minus 1 or log of 2, how randomly distributed are the decimals, you know? Oh. Like if you do the first million digits, you know, and you look at the distribution of how many 1s, 2s, 3s, 4s, 5s, 6s, 7s, 8s, 9s, 0s, you know, what statistical properties do you see? And then what about, you know, how often is a 5 next to a 3 versus next to an 8 or a 7, right? There's all sorts of stuff where it's apparently, you know, really hard. And we'd like to conjecture that it's just totally random and for some sense of random that still needs to be made more precise in a lot of cases. But actually proving it for various precise versions of random is really hard. There's like really basic stuff, like can you prove that pi plus e is irrational? That the decimal sequence doesn't eventually just start repeating?
No, not sure.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff that we don't know if you try and go out, you know, really far out there in the decimal sequence.
We know pi is irrational, even transcendental.
It's increasing. When you're putting like 1 to the plus 1, 1 to the plus 2, 1 to the plus 3, e to the plus 1 plus all that, it's going like from 10 to 20, then to 30 to 40 to 50. Yeah. A lot of numbers.
Nice thing about the alternating series test is that it never fails, in the sense that under the hypothesis that you have decreasing terms, have that much true, right, then there's two possibilities. Right? Either these go to zero, or they don't. Right? They either converge to zero, or they converge to something else, or they don't converge at all. We've looked at this case, right? This is the alternating theory case, right? We have that it converges. That's the alternating series test. Right? And then if the terms don't go to zero, then slapping on some minus signs on some of the terms will not make them go to zero, right? To converge to zero, your sequence needs to be getting small when n is large, right? Because close to zero means small, right? Changing the signs won't change how close or far away you are from zero. So if these don't go to zero, alternating the signs, they still won't go to zero. So in that case, we already know that if the individual terms don't go to zero, then the series, where you add up all those terms, never stabilizes. So if you have decreasing terms, and you're interested in the alternating sum of them, then it's very nice in that there's only two things that can happen. Whereas there are some other tests where as we'll see later when we talk about ratio and root tests, where sometimes there's like a third boundary case where the test says, I don't know. This one, it's very clear cut. Provided you can figure out whether or not the sequence goes to zero. It either does or it doesn't. This is the one I called the divergence test, also called the nth term test. An example, you could have, say, let's be easy with reading this. Let's start this one if you want. So here's an alternating series. So it's going to be negative, okay, plug in 1, you get 2 plus 3x squared minus 4 thirds to the 4 plus. This series diverges.
It seems like it would converge.
Well, the problem is the individual terms don't go to zero.
Doesn't 1 plus 1 over n to the n converge to e?
Exactly.
Oh yeah, the value is going to increase.
Yeah.
And the 1 before, yeah. Well, the 1 after is just going to be greater than the 1 before. Yeah.
You say converge or diverge?
Well, actually, well, 1 over 1 plus 1 over n to the n is 20, since it's negative 1 to the n diverges.
Oh, since it's multiplied.
How do you know when it's going to 3 or if you just
I've done that one before. Well, in general, if your exponent is a variable, then a logarithm is probably the way to handle it.
No, we can't use this one because when you try to do less than, when trying to do like
this one is
the first one is greater.
You have to use L'Hopital's rule on
first
it.
First is less than the second. Yeah, is backwards. Mm-hmm. So you can't use that test. So you swap it.
Take a logarithm, you rewrite it in infinity over infinity form, you use L'Hopital's rule, and you get, and in this case you only have to use L'Hopital's rule once, and then you just do some easy canceling, and you get something that goes to 1.
Okay.
So the logarithm of it goes to 1, the logarithm function is continuous at 1, so the original sequence goes to e to the 1. It's more precise. It's not that the logarithm is continuous, it's that the exponential function is continuous. And the exponential function converts the logarithm. Let's see, another case of that.
Things could go wrong.
Something else where I mean, here's something where it actually is decreasing. So how about we didn't have the powers on there? So you might consider this, right? Okay. But it's going to diverge, right? Because the sequence of your terms is not going to zero, it's going to one.
Instead of going to zero. So in this example, you were doing, you're adding numbers that in the limit, they would alternate between something close to positive e and something close to negative e. So you would never stabilize. You'd always be going back and forth by an amount that was close to e. And here, you would always be going back and forth by an amount that's close to 1. So again, you'll never stabilize.
So if that was on a test, how would we prove? Just by using the tests?
I would just say, this is good enough for me. I mean, you're showing that the terms don't go to zero.
Okay.
Right? And so we know that if the terms don't go to zero, the series doesn't converge. Here's a trickier one. Okay. Okay. Sine squared of n over n does go to zero, right? Because it's squeezed between zero over n and 1 over n. And those go to zero. So it does go to zero. But
squeeze theorem, right?
Yeah, squeeze theorem, exactly. But the sequence The problem here is the sine function, even when you square it, it's still a wave, right? It goes up and down, right? This is a wave between 0 and 1, right? With actually a period pi. And so this sequence is actually not going to be It goes to zero, but some places it increases. So you can't apply the alternating series test to this. If you're going to prove that this converges or prove that it diverges, you're going to have to use some more advanced technique. So let me show you an example. Let's see, sine of 3 squared divided by 3. And then I think, let's see, sine of 4 squared divided by 4. I think this should be. Yeah. Thank you. the AST test, you have to, it has to be smaller and smaller terms that you're adding and subtracting. So like this one is. So that is the biggest limitation of the alternating series test, really, is that to use it, you need to know that your terms are getting smaller. Okay, I'm sorry, I'm running over time. Last one I promise. Okay, so 5 series. See if the AST applies, see if the nth term test or divergence test applies.